Item number three, and that's the director's report. Mr. Director?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. We have a very active agenda for the next couple of days. Looking forward to the discussions. But first, a few other items. You do have a written report, and I want to draw your attention to that. One thing that I'm used to getting this time of year for forever is a big game status report, wintering report from around the state, and so I asked folks to do that, and you'll see a packet put together by region. Across the state, it varies a bit, as it always does, but it's, for the most part, average conditions. In Washington, of course, we have a well-established feeding program in the central part of the state, so it's business as usual, and we didn't have to initiate anything. We're doing it already. We are having some pretty serious winter in Klickitat County, in South Central, that area, and so it's something to watch as we go along, but deer and elk are moving out into lower country, as in the Asotin area also. So we're keeping an eye on those and working with private landowners to protect their haystacks, and also we'll go ahead and do what we need to do if winter continues hard. Things can change very rapidly, as everybody knows, and just within a few days, things can open up because of our low elevation. So anyway, it's something that we're watching carefully. Also in that report, there's a report in there from our enforcement program. Some notes on the crab strike. I guess the crab strike is over. People are out fishing. And I think conditions should be very good for the crab harvest this year. Also, just a note there, you can see that Chief Anderson is continuing to make improvements on our capabilities, our communication capabilities. The chief's doing a great job and has, even though he's been in acting, he has taken on several initiatives personally and is pushing those through, and he's doing a terrific job, I think, leading our enforcement program and moving us forward on in several areas, and I'd like to thank him. I think he's here today for his extra duty and help. There he is back there. So thanks, Chris. A couple comments on our licensing system. We made our changeover on December 18th to a new vendor. There's a couple of small glitches, but as of yesterday, I think we have probably 80-90% of everybody up and running. Some of our smaller vendors in remote areas we're just getting to them, but we should be totally up and running by in time for controlled hunts and spring fishing seasons. It's gone very smoothly. A bit of angst by some over we're requiring people to establish a password. That's part of our new security system to prevent some of the hacking issues we've had last summer. And just an upgrade, I guess, on our security systems for this, for our licensing system. So that's all good, just a little bit extra hassle for folks. But it's going great, and our licensing section's done a terrific job. A couple comments on Washington Wild Future. We've been moving along, continuing to have public meetings. We've had 17 public meetings around the state. We just had one in December up at Fisherman's Terminal with some commercial fishermen. And we are starting in the state legislature. This week we had two work sessions, one in the House where we talked about Wild Future and our budget issues. Introducing the problem and talking about the legislation that we hope to have in play here over the next few months. In addition to the Wild Future presentation, we also talked about our HPA program. In the Senate, we had a bit of a briefing on the Columbia River policy, which we will talk here on Saturday. And then we had a few minutes to talk about Wild Future and the legislation we're going to bring forward. We also had a request, and staff provided some really excellent programs on our crop sharing program, or cost sharing, crop sharing. It's crop sharing. And it takes on several aspects on the lands that the department owns. We have a timber program. Of course, we have a livestock grazing program and an agricultural program where we grow crops and cost share, as well as leave crops for wildlife, for waterfowl feeding and stuff. And anyway, the program was excellent. And if you get a chance, get on TVW and watch that. I thought we did a really nice job on that. And actually, both of these presentations with the senator on TVW in the archives. And I'd remind sportsmen out there that if you want to know what the department's up to in the legislature, at least that, and when we're meeting in Olympia, all of these meetings and those kind of meetings are on TVW. And certainly, if you're having trouble getting to sleep at night or something, it's something that you could watch. But you can find out what we're up to or what information we're presenting to the legislature. And I encourage you to check that out. It's not only good for Department of Fish and Wildlife, but for state government in general. You can find a lot on there. So we're continuing to look for sponsors for our legislation. The bills that we're bringing forward, are a recreational fishing and hunting license fee revisions, also commercial fishing license fee revisions. We're looking for our hydraulic project approval, HPA approval extension. Those are our habitat programs where we monitor nearshore construction activities, etc. And also, we're looking to expand immunity from recreational liability for private landowners, and the goal there being to increase the access or the willingness of private landowners to provide access to sportsmen. So that's the legislation we have in the mill this year. We've been very active talking to legislators. Myself, Joe, and other staff have been up there all week pretty much, and, well, for the last several months visiting with people. We're getting a lot of interest from sportsmen. Appreciate that activity. The bills that we have out there and the fee adjustments that we have right now are a starting place. Everybody needs to know that. We put a pretty aggressive package there together. We have listened to sportsmen. We backed off on some of the costs on parts of the licensing, particularly on the catch record card part. Originally, we had a $17 fee there. We backed down to $10. We'd like to shape these fees to meet people's expectations, but also we have some real needs on the revenue side that we have to meet. And we know it's going to... We know we're just entering the negotiations, and the legislature will help shape this. Sportsmen, please keep tuned in and keep providing feedback and information, because we are listening. I said we had 17 public meetings, so we've contacted or heard directly from, 500-600 people at least, but also on our webpage, a couple thousand people have commented. And it's easy to continue to comment on there, and we're reading them and trying to shape a package that works for you. And part of this is what Wild Future is all about is what our department's going to look like in the future and what we want. There's a lot of details in there on the budget in terms of actual production or enhancements from the hatchery side, what we want to try to do to increase access, and all of those things are stuff that we want people to know about, because we expect lots of you will weigh in if we get a hearing, or when we get a hearing in the legislature later in the spring. So keep tuned.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is there a bill on payment in lieu of taxes?
I don't know.
No?
Someone else may bring that. But it's not in our packet.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll keep the commission informed on this as we go along. Oh, also, well, I'll talk about this, I guess, here in a minute, but I myself, Joe, and the chairman attended WAFWA meeting. We were on several panels. The state of Washington was on the panels to discuss a few items, but one of the items we discussed extensively was we got an update on the Blue Ribbon Panel, which is a panel put together at the federal level to look for ways to provide alternative funding to fish and wildlife agencies to work on issues for species of greatest conservation need, but also to expand the funding sources for wildlife agencies to recognize that fish and wildlife agencies have largely and always been funded by hunters and fishermen. If you look at our budget, at PIE in the legislature, you'll see that 66% of our budget is directly related to sportsmen's dollars, whether it's license fees, permits, or excise taxes on hunting and fishing equipment and boat gas excise tax. So you all have funded conservation for years, since the 30s, with the original Pittman-Robertson Act, Dingell-Johnson, and Wallop-Breaux Acts. Now we're looking at the possibility of new legislation that would put an excise tax on domestic oil and gas drilling and provide a similar kind of funding source that we could match for species that aren't hunted and fished. When we've been running around the state on our Wild Futures program, we've been hearing a lot from sportsmen, and I think we've about tapped you out. We're pushing the envelope, I think, on resident hunting and fishing fees. It's always been a recreation, in particular for people that live in rural areas, something that they could go do around home, and they could do it at a reasonable cost. We want to continue that. It's something that is important to people all over the state, urban and rural, but certainly we want to keep it at a level where families can continue to participate. And so an alternative would be to figure out a way to find alternative funding where people that don't hunt and fish can also contribute to wildlife and fish management across the state. And that's what's going on kind of in a big way right now. We, of course, have had what was called the Wildlife Leaders Forum here in the state to talk about what we could do to generate funds within Washington to match for this effort into the future. This is, you know, an into the future program. It's not immediately happening, but we're looking forward to continuing that discussion and to try to find out ways to broaden this funding and to maybe relax some of the need or the demand on hunters and fishermen into the future. So more on that in over the next couple of years. Also down at WAFWA, I proposed establishing a wolf working group or a wolf workshop to the other directors. We had quite a discussion about that. Wolf management is pretty political, and it's difficult across the range, but in some states it's more contentious than Washington, even, believe it or not. And so what we did was we established an ad hoc working group of myself, Virgil Moore from Idaho, and Bob Brochard from Colorado. We're going to talk to some of our biologists and figure out the best way to do this, but I think we'll have a standing up of a committee this summer, and we'll be seeing wolf working groups into the future. The idea of these working groups, we have deer elk working groups, we have a cougar group, black bears, other species at the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. But it's a place where biologists from across the West can get together and talk about information and population monitoring levels in real time and compare notes in real time and their learning experiences from a management standpoint. And they've been really effective through the years to share research and information across states. We want to do the same thing for wolves in the future, and we're on track to do that. So let's see. Other reports, lots of them. We had a very interesting report out of Wyoming on chronic wasting disease. I don't know of how many of our sportsmen have tracked that or how the commission's tracked that, but it started out in a was first discovered in a small area of southeast Wyoming, northeast Colorado. Its sense has spread across those states, and currently they find chronic wasting disease pretty much across Wyoming and a large portion of Colorado. We got a discussion about this. At first, it's mostly been a deer disease, but now we are seeing it in elk. Wyoming's concerned. Wyoming has, they probably feed more elk than any other state in the country. And they're very concerned about chronic wasting disease getting established in their feed grounds. And I think the rest of the country is too. But it's something we're watching. The chronic wasting disease has not been as disastrous as predicted. And there are some natural, genetic or resistances to the disease, it appears, in the populations. And so it's something we'll watch through time, but it's something that we don't want to have in Washington. And certainly, I know Idaho and Montana are monitoring carefully, and more on that. But it's the message is it's continuing to spread and increase, and it's something that we need to be thinking about. Considerable discussion at the Western Association on the new administration and transitioning to a new administration at the federal level. People, of course, speculating on how this will impact major policy decisions. Lots of discussion centered around the Endangered Species Act and how that's working for states and some states would like to see some updating of the Endangered Species Act in the future. And anyway, considerable discussion around those issues. One of our own, Michael Cuttle Jr., was assigned along with Saul Palazzolo of Idaho to be representatives for the new farm bill for the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. That's great to have one of our people on that important task force. And the farm bill is one place that puts dollars on the ground for conservation and makes a pretty darn big difference. It's across the country, but it moves the dial on wildlife populations. So it's something to watch, and it's neat to have one of our people involved in that in the future. Let's see here. Quite a bit of information on wild horses and burros. Wild horse and burro populations have gone through the roof, particularly in the Great Basin, in drier areas. They cause habitat damage and compete for rangeland with deer, elk, and bighorn sheep, and it's a real problem. They have certain protections under federal law that allows their management to be a big challenge. And that's an area where some people are really would like to see some changes in federal law to get a handle on wild horse and burro management. Other reports on mule deer, black-footed ferrets, prairie chickens, sage grouse, lots of time spent on sage grouse. We have 700 to 1,000 birds in the central part of the state. They're a species that we watch very carefully. In other states, the interior western states, it's a big deal, and their management can impact other resource use across the range, and so they've been a real hot topic for the last several years. We're concerned about sage grouse because we do have low populations, and we've had impacted habitats. So we're part of those discussions. An update on CITES, which is an international board on wildlife management. A lot of trapping information there. One very interesting topic from Arizona was they gave quite a presentation on a public relations campaign that they've worked on to just highlight their activities across the state and the importance of wildlife management for people that don't necessarily hunt and fish, but just or to try to highlight the role of their department, in the state, just to make people more aware. And they had some really catchy video and radio shots to talk about wildlife. And, you know, one of them was these guys roaring through the arroyos or whatever out in the desert on their mountain bikes, screaming along. And then all of a sudden they slam on their brakes. And here's a saguaro cactus with a red-tailed hawk in the top of it. And they stop, you know, and look at that thing for a minute, and it takes off. And it's just really amazing video. They had another one of a family out camping, a young family, and they're all getting ready to take their pictures, whatnot, their pictures taken, and out walks a doe and a couple of fawns, and how they all turn to watch that, and what a touching part or important part of that their camping experience wildlife was. And so it was pretty neat, and I think Joe and Brad both really, we liked it a lot, and so we're going to follow up a little bit with that, and it was neat to see that. They also had done a lot of research on generational, how different generations access news. It seems like there's a few people on my street that still get the newspaper. I'm one of them, but lots of other people don't anymore. It's not a print. They get their news off the internet, and so you can provide information in lots of different ways, but we have to be more up to date, I guess, or more clever on how we deliver information to people. And that was something that we really liked, and I know Joe liked it. We're going to try to investigate a little bit more and learn more about that. So with that, I know that Ron Warren and Craig had a couple items that from the director's report, and if you guys want to come up.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, Craig Burley, Fish Management Division Manager. And I just wanted to take a couple minutes and talk about our plan for sport rule simplification that we're initiating this year and will be working on throughout this next year. As the director mentioned just a minute ago, during the Wild Future discussions that we've had with the public, one of the things that we heard was that our rules are too complicated and that they'd like to see those simpler. And we agree that there are things we think we can do to make our rules simpler to understand. They're never going to be simple. We're in a pretty complicated environment as we try to manage fishing opportunity within our conservation objectives. But we do think there are things that we can do to make those simpler to understand. And so, as you know, last month in December, the Commission adopted sport rules that will take effect this coming July, and that completed a three-year cycle where the department went out and solicited proposals from the public for those different geographic areas. And so for this year, what we'd like to do is, rather than solicit proposals from the public, initially what we'd like to do is focus on making the sport fishing rules for our freshwater species easier to understand. We want to work this spring through the summer and internally developing regulations, meeting with all of our regional district staffs, developing a package that then we can take out to the public for comment this fall. And the idea would be we'd have a package, we'd meet with our public at regional meetings throughout the state, we'd have our online comment opportunity, and then starting in the September time period, meeting with the commission to work through that rule package. The idea is that we would then have a package for adoption in December, and those rules would take effect in July of the following year. So wanted to give you that update of what our thoughts were and see if you had any questions about that plan.
Yes.
Two, actually. So we'll continue on the three-year cycle, though. Is that the plan?
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. So the intent is, given the challenges that we have from a workload perspective to go through all of our freshwater rules to simplify those rules, we had not planned on asking the public for fishing rule changes at the same time, but rather use this 2017 year to develop a package that we could focus on and take to the public for comment.
And then I have a second follow-up that's sort of related. How's the Fish Washington app coming along?
Thank you for that, Commissioner. It's actually going very well. The department staff have been working very hard over a year now on this application. We have a beta application in testing right now. We've provided that to a number of our folks in the community, some of our sport fish advisors. They've been giving us feedback on that application. So we have a structure in place. We're making some changes, and we're targeting this summer to have an initial application that we can distribute for the out to the public. The part of the challenge is trying to figure out how much of the application will be ready. We suspect that there will be updates as we go along, but the first cut, we want to have fishing regulations available for the public. So it's pretty exciting.
Did you have another question?
No, I
didn't. Okay. Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig, I think this is great. I guess I have a two-part question. One, how are you going to test the simplification of the language so that we know, in fact, we've simplified it for people, because it truly is an issue? That's the first part. The second part is, I think in the marine rule package, it's even more complicated than in the freshwater. So I assume you have that on your screen for that cycle as well?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. So this is a very big undertaking, and we wanted to be able to demonstrate success this year. And so given that workload, we were proposing to focus on freshwater rules this year, demonstrate some successes there, and then move to other areas in our regulation package, marine fish. We also, through the North of Falcon process, we have our salmon seasons that we're going to be looking at as well, not only this year but into the future. So we see this as an ongoing process to make our rules simpler, and our first step is really focusing on these freshwater rules for these species.
Back to my first question, how are you going to engage with the public to know that they view it as simpler?
That is a great question. Department staff have spent some time talking with other states around the West that have done this kind of work. Idaho did this type of simplification about 2 years ago. Arizona is working on it now, as well as Oregon just completed it last year. So we have some models that we can look at for success. But we are going to be taking this package out to the public to get some feedback, to see if there are changes that need to be made, to make sure that we are getting it right.
Very good. Thank you.
Commissioner Graber?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the new app. I was at our last meeting. Craig requested that I get on board with the beta test. And I have to say, it's a lot further along than I anticipated, Craig. It really functions well. You know, I can just hit the button, it finds me, and then if I'm on Fish Lake, it does give me the regulations. And one of the comments that I provided was, I didn't see an indication, like, if the two-pole rule was allowed. And then, subsequently, I did find that. So I'm sure there's a few glitches to work out, and, you know, this whole simplification process will benefit this app, too, as we tighten those down. But I have to say that I've been very impressed with the apps and its function thus far. One of the other features, Commissioner Thornburn, is I accessed a video with Chris Donnelly on a how to fish from shore on Lake Roosevelt for Rainbow. So the videos, the how-to, the instructional videos are also available through this app. So as I say, I'm very impressed with how far along it is and how it functions.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Graybill. Staff have been working very hard on this application, integrating Fish Washington information from our website as well as the YouTube videos staff have made. So the vision long-term is people are going to have a one-stop shop on their mobile device to be able to get all of that information from what the rules are to where to go fishing, when, and how with the videos. So it's a pretty exciting thing that we're doing, and if you'd like, we'd be happy to have staff come and brief you on where we are with the app, give you a bit of a demonstration. Be happy to do that.
I think that would be really
good. And also, Craig, as I understand, we're the first state to really take on this venture, and there's already been inquiries from other states to watch our progress, and I think are going to be interested in how we establish this.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Directors, Ron Warren, Fish Program, I just wanted to bring forward a topic I'm sure all of you have either read about or heard about. We had an article through a blog site by the name of Tidal Exchange that reported that the Puget Sound tribes were not reporting coho catch in 2016. And I just wanted to give you a quick update of how that information came to bear to the public and give you that information so you were fully informed. Before I start, we've also made sure that the directors knew what we were doing, but we've also briefed our our advisors, and I have sent responses to the Tidal Exchange so that they could post a written response as well. But so we had an individual who is part of that site seek a public disclosure request for harvest. And through the request, the individual really asked for summary information on tribal catch by tribe, by area, for Chinook and Coho. And typically when we've got our database full after the entire season's over, we'd be able to query that database and send that information to the requester. Where they caught us was that we had fish tickets because of our RCWs and the reporting restrictions or provisions within the RCW. We had those, but we had not key punched them in. We also had been meeting in season where we had verbal confirmation from the tribes on what their catch had been. And we had access to TOCUS, which is the tribal catch database, but those are not our records. So the information that we provided this individual were Chinook catches only up to the date of the request, and we did not provide coho catches because we did not have them key punched in, so we could not provide them in the format that the individual had requested. I will say that we, the fish program, I learned a lot in how to communicate that back to requesters. We are continuing to work with the requester to make sure that we provide not only the original information, but they've made additional requests, not only of us, but of the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, and we're working hard to provide that information to them. I just want all of you, the public that we serve, to know that at no time did the tribes not fulfill their obligations under USV Washington in providing their catch data to us. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions? Yes.
On that issue?
Can I go on to another issue?
You're the commissioner, sir.
Well, you're going to give me the answer to that. The question is, and it's not new to you, where are we on point, no point?
Thank you, Commissioner Mankin. We are developing internal proposal to take back the point-no-point. I think last month we were waiting for communications from policy folks at Squamish. Again, I've had good conversations with Port Gamble and believe that we've resolved the issues from that perspective, but we've recently received information to allow us to develop the proposal for going back to Squamish to continue that conversation, hope to provide that package to the director's office for approval to take back to the tribes within the week, maybe 10 days, and then reach out to Squamish, try to get something scheduled. We do have a February 1st co-manager meeting, so at the least, I'll be able to look Squamish tribal leaders in the eye, try to get something scheduled face-to-face. That's always the best and easiest way to coordinate things, I believe. And so at the latest on February 1st, I'll get something scheduled. But we've stayed in touch with the Corps of Engineers. There are a couple people interested public. You heard one from Norm earlier about point-no-point. Got a couple others that call on a regular basis that I talk to assure that it's front and center. Told the director last night, I really want to check this one off. I want a boat launch. I think we all do. And just working hard to try to get that done.
Thank you, Craig, Ron.
Yeah, I'll just make a couple more comments on you guys. And actually, the point-no-point made me think of this, but a few commission meetings ago, I asked Ron to come up and present some work plans on a few items that have been hanging on, some of them for 20 years. And we are making some progress. I do have expectations that we're an outfit that works by management by objective, and we get things done. And just want to take the opportunity to let people know we are working on those. I hold these guys feet to the fire on making progress. And so things like point no point, the Winooch mitigation, Skokomish River access, the 7400 road access up on the Winooch. We've had one of my buddies I fish with down here on the Cowlitz sent me an email on the way down and wanted me to talk to folks about trout or steelheads, summer run steelhead production on out of the trout hatchery there and the mortality problems we're having. These are things that come across my desk and I think about and worry about, and because I worry about them, Ron worries about them, and so a whole bunch of people worry about them. And Norm said a couple things that, you know, he was worried some stuff was tied to wild futures. It's all tied to wild futures. Everything we do is tied to having a strong funding base for the department and being able to move forward on issues. And we sometimes have these big items that we work hard on the commission. But every day, I'll guarantee you, there's 1,000 items that we're working on across this state for to improve hunting and fishing, and most of them go unnoticed. But it's fun when a few things come together. And I'm one of the beta testers on our fish app, and so when I get out at the ramp to put my boat in, and I can key up the regs and answer some questions that 2 years ago I had, it's a big deal for me. And I know we made progress, and there's a lot of sweatshop work that goes behind producing something like that. And so anyway, I just wanted to thank staff for all you do every day to keep us moving down the road. And with that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Jim. I just want to report back, I guess, on, I don't want this to sound negative, but some things that we're working on just take too damn long. And it's, I don't know whose fault it is, if it's anyone's fault, probably not in the agency, but there has to be a way to put some things on the fast track. I don't know how many years we've been talking about this Occupy Skagit issue. A catch and release steelhead fishery. pretty important, I think, in a variety of ways. Relieve some pressure on the coastal steelhead streams, provide some opportunity, sell some licenses. That and this point-no-point boat ramp, those are two that are on my list that have frankly taken too long.
While we're making a list, let me add one. On the coast, I should have asked Ron while he was up here, the Snyder Creek broodstock program was shut down with the anticipation that we would create a new broodstock program, I think in the Bogashiel or the Kalawa. How are we doing on that one?
Commissioner Wecker, thank you. I think we're doing fine. It's been a little while since I've checked in on that. So many projects, as they move forward, often seem to be running smoothly, and I don't ask, and so they don't tell. The last I checked on it is, yes, the Snyder Creek program went away as we created the Wild Stock Gene Bank within the Solduck River. And you're right that the broodstock was moved to the Bogashiel, I believe. But you're right, it's the Bogashiel or Kalawa. I'll check and get back to you on that. I know that the local community and the guide association there was still looking at alternative sites, working with co-managers, and I believe U.S. Forest Service to try to see if we could access certain properties, looking for a good site while continuing to meet your policies through hatchery and fishery reform, as well as staying within the HSRG principles that we follow, setting up a different program like that. But I have not heard that anything is going poorly. My assumption in that is that it continues to move forward, but I'll check and give you a call maybe in between meetings here.
I'd appreciate that, because that is one of the programs that was very loved by the community. Lots of volunteer effort put in. They were broodstocking wild fish, basically, so keeping the genetics of the produced fish fairly close to the wild. And we shut it down, what,
four years ago.
So that one's taken a long time to get to the next step where we give them something in return.
Yeah, and I believe that they continue to broodstock. Remember that the Guide Association, with in cooperation with the City of Forks through the hotel motel taxes, there was a partnership there because of the economic benefit of bringing clients to town to fish for this recovery of wild steelhead. And as far as I know, that continues. We've met all summer long with the North Coast, I can't remember the name of the organization, my apologies, but Bob Kratzer, that group, really staying in touch with them to talk about the possibility of us getting an application out to understand where guides fish. We currently don't have a logbook that's required by guides. There's currently bills to start certain pilot programs within the legislature, and to be quite honest, I think it's premature there, because we don't know where they're fishing and the regularity, those types of things. And until we have the basics, we have to do a better job. But get some information and get it back.
Okay. And the broodstock, you said that they're still generating. Where is that being planted?
At Bogashiel. They've just moved it to a hatchery site for holding. I believe they hold fish at Solduck, incubate at Solduck, and then move back to Bogashiel for rearing and release.
I see. Okay, thanks. I didn't want to take too much time, but just add this to the list of projects that will earn us some credit if we get it done.
Yeah, on that one, if I may, Commissioner Wecker, I think the onus is not on us right now. The onus is on the Guide Association. It's up to them to try to find that alternative site. They were certainly supportive in all of the resource management changes that we had made, and we are accommodating alternative rearing programs at sites to keep their economic engine going while they continue to work through other entities and to try to find that alternative site.
Thanks. And I just had some more general comments, questions. Director, you mentioned that we are still looking for sponsors for our bill. That, to me, is an indication that, you know, it's difficult. I think by this time we normally did have sponsors who would step forward. So do you have a sense of what might open the possibility with some of the legislators who are concerned with our issues? What would induce them to become sponsors for us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, Commissioner, we do have some sponsors lined up and ready, and we have other people lined up. It's not like we don't have any. But we'd like to have the right sponsors. But people are a little reticent, and actually, this commission meeting may change some people's minds about how they may approach our Wild Future initiative.
So I assume you're talking about the Columbia River decision.
Columbia River policy. Yeah, there's lots of concern there. There's people concerned about the North of Falcon negotiations, and so we'll be informing folks more today on that. There's not a person in this room, myself included, that likes to see a fee increase. And anytime there is a fee increase, we want to be confident that the dollars we spend are going to things that improve hunting and fishing from our point of view. We'll never be able to meet that for every person in the room. Everybody knows that. No one has the expectations it'll be perfect for me. But we'll do as good a job as we can. And like I said, we're early in this debate. We've thrown some things on the wall. We'll see what sticks. And by the end of the day, by the end of the legislative session, I'm hoping that we'll see something that'll help the department be more secure in its funding base. I have no illusion it will look exactly like what we have out there right now. But I welcome the debate and to talk more about it. And I think we'll see these packages have a fair hearing in the legislature, and we'll have quite a discussion, I'm sure, this spring.
Okay, just one more. Because you provided the perfect segue into my next point, which is that I just wanted to say that I used to really enjoy the financial reports, the detailed financial reports that Joe used to put together, in which at virtually every meeting you would let us know how far we are from the projected revenues. Because we have a budget, and in the past we used to track just how close we were to receiving the revenues that we expected and how we were doing on our expenditures, tracking and accounting, showing some transparency in how we're managing the money that we're being provided. So I just wanted to say I used to feel like that was a valuable part of the director's report. Not sure when or why we got away from doing that, but I think in these times when there is so much obvious distrust of government across the nation, we've got an uphill climb to reestablish that trust. And we hear voices for greater transparency. I think nobody is against transparency. It's just difficult to achieve to the extent that will satisfy everyone. And in certain circumstances, very problematic like our negotiations with the tribes. But nevertheless, I believe that we should try to achieve as much transparency as we can, including transparency after the fact. Let's talk about how we spent the money. Let's talk about how we're doing with license fee revenues. And a final point is that when we used to talk about these fee increases in the past, we were always cognizant that sometimes when you raise the fees, people walk away. So you actually undermine your revenue stream. And that tipping point, I know you're very aware that that's something we don't want to go past. But we have tracked, and I think it'd be interesting for the rest of the commission to see what happened when we did that last fee increase, because there was a decline in the sale of hunting licenses. I don't think the fishing licenses were affected, but the hunting license sales went down. I don't know if they ever rebounded, but it's something to keep in mind, I think.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wecker, I think that's a great reminder. In my mind, I have been trying to, and I was trying to remember, I think it was two meetings ago, where I brought in the multicolored bar graphs, comparison to past years, participation. Yeah. I hope to keep doing that.
Okay.
I'd be happy to maybe at the February meeting come back with a full report on the budget status. I didn't spend a lot of time this meeting, didn't plan on it anyway, in talking about the governor's budget, because essentially the governor's budget came out in December and pretty much captured our wild future request, which we had discussed as a commission. But I'd be happy to come back and talk about where we are. It would be probably more timely. In February, we hope to see the quarterly revenue projections for the state.
Yeah.
And that's the document that the House and Senate use to base their budgets on. So right now, you know, we're at this first week of the long budget session, and don't expect budget discussions to really get intense until the end of February, 1st of March. And so we'll see how that goes. And we're likely, I mean, from what I'm hearing, we're likely to be here till June talking about it. So happy to come back in February with some detail in terms of where we are with the 15-17 budget and progress to date on the 17-19 legislative session.
Yeah, and there was, and one other request I'd make is maybe if you could on occasion summarize for us the capital budget accounting.
Great, yeah, great idea.
Because that was what led to the Burke report that I have to remind commissioners of, which was a major audit of the department in about 2005, because we had gotten behind in our expenditure of capital funds, and it was creating a huge uproar at the legislative level. So if we could, and one of the findings of the Burke report was that the commission wasn't paying attention. It was the commission was not doing its job as in applying fiscal oversight. So if you can keep that on the plate.
We'll do. Yeah, our the 17-19 capital budget that was proposed by the governor is very good for us in terms of infrastructure. And if you look at the history since the Burke report, we've gotten continued building of funding support for hatcheries, for access sites, land management. That feels pretty good. If you remember back at the time of the report, we were so behind in terms of our ability to invest in our facilities and on the ground activities, and I forget the number, but I think we're in the 80s, $80 million or so for our own facilities. But I can come back and hit on that too.
And I have to give Joe a lot of credit for the reestablishment of the trust of the department at the legislature, as well as Phil Anderson. I mean, you came in and really took that report and the problem seriously. So things are just a lot better now.
Our Assistant Director Tim Burns is doing a great job.
Chair, I want to reflect just a little bit on my day job and how I interact with the public, recreational, commercial, and tribal. And on the recreational side, and I guess on the commercial side, for that matter, they realize that they have to pay to play. I mean, it's going to cost money to buy your respective licenses and participate in the activities that this department provides them. But they're anxious to know that the deliverables that they're expecting that they got to pay for. The average guy out there in the rural areas, I don't believe gets it. He just doesn't get it. And whether he doesn't want to get it, so how we sell our deliverable package to the public, I think is crucial. And I don't know, I don't have the answer for that, but I think it would deserve some dialogue at some point. How we reach out to these people, they know they have to pay to play, but they want to know they're getting a bang for their buck. I hear it all the time.
Yeah, thank you, Larry, for those comments, because I'm still shocked at the number of people, when the fee package comes up, how many anglers particularly still believe the license fees go to the general fund. I mean, that's a basic tenet that there's a misunderstanding about, and it's an indicator of what I think of as a lack of communication with the public. I mean, it's not a rumor that got started. That's just a question that remains prevalent in the angling community, particularly in inland waters. And, you know, we just need to do a better job of communicating with the public about where their fees go and how they're applied.
And picking up on that, what the director and Joe and I saw with the Arizona presentation on, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the acceptance of the Arizona department in the eyes of the public after this campaign went up like 10% or something like that. So the messages were very nice, very simple, but they got out there into a broad range. And we do want to, I think, we agreed to have that presentation shared with the commission at some time, because they offered it up. It was a firm out of, I don't know where the firm was, but what we saw is available to us. I think we would benefit by seeing that, and then how it could be tailored here. So,
in this, marketing company,
it's a marketing it's First Madison or something like that. I don't know if it's a New York company, but do you know, Joe?
The name of the firm that Arizona contracted with was off Madison Avenue. I don't believe, even despite the name, that they were from New York. But
that's why it's off Madison.
It was off. I think it's a company in the western part of the U.S. But we have requested that presentation, Mr. Chair, and hope to get that in front of you, just so you can see some interesting ideas and examples that other states have used with some success.
And the success was notable. I mean, you know, it was a big bump. And so in accepting what the department's doing and understanding of their department. So, okay, any other comments? Okay, thank you, Mr. Director. Always educational. And we